Welcome to Canada Conversations, part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Delaware Public Media News Director Tom Byrne. This conversation focuses on the race for governor, and we are joined by Independent Party of Delaware candidate Kathy DeMattias. Kathy, thanks for joining us on Canada Conversations.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor.
We'd like to start by asking you, what prompted you to run for governor?
What prompted me to run is I wrote a book titled The Stimulus Package. It was called The Secret Life, The Stimulus Package. And in that storyline, I literally was putting all my inventions, everything that I've been working on for literally the last 20 years. And my thoughts were to use the entertainment industry by writing a book and turning it into a movie. And that was my thoughts. My thoughts were book, movie, and eventually someday I would run for president. Like that's where my thoughts were. Well, I came home for the holidays, and the birth of my granddaughter was in February. And by the end of the February, it was pretty clear we were going to be stuck here. And the more I started to look at everything that was happening, the more, you know, I realized I was not going to be able to get back out on the road to sell my book, which is how I was making a living to put through my plans. And the more I kept looking at things, I was like, okay, my plans were for alternative healing. My plans were for jobs. My plans were to bring manufacturing back. And I was like, you know what? I think I would have a better shot at this as being governor and leading the state of Delaware, considering that the movie industry right now is sort of not going anywhere. So I was like, well, I wrote an economic stimulus package, so why don't I, you know, give it to the people of Delaware? So I reformulated my plans. I went down to the beach and did some soul searching and a lot of, you know, talking with God. And I took my husband down to Massey's Landing, and I looked at him and I said, Conrad, I'm going to run for governor of Delaware. And he said, I know, I've been waiting for you to say it, which I was shocked. I was shocked that my husband was, you know, at that point. So it was something I told John Carney about 3 years ago. I created a product that helps the body detox from, which we found in our preliminary studies, that we found that it helped detox the body from the flu in less than 2 hours. And I had, you know, contacted John Carney and asked to be put in a pilot program. I contacted Mike Ramone. I contacted Chris Coons. And I kept writing letters and writing letters. And one day I had Carney cornered at the crossroads. Boy, that's like a little story right there. And I said to him, I said, look, I've got something that could really help the people of Delaware. And he kind of basically said, you know, he's like, I don't want to talk about this. And it really surprised me. And I came home and I sent him an email and said, you'll be hearing from me again. And I kind of tucked that away and buried it. And I began writing my plans. I just did them in a different way. I never really thought that I was really going to do it in this way, but COVID cornered me into a box, and I'm a fighter, so I came out swinging.
So the governor is the state's chief executive. How would you describe the leadership style that you would bring to the job if elected?
Well, one of the things that I've actually already been doing is I traveled around the country all last year, and I started talking with industry leaders that are working on materials that would help with car manufacturing utilizing hemp industries. So I had already met with all those people, spent a lot of time in Las Vegas. I spent time in Colorado and met with a lot of industry leaders here. So in my mind, I'm already doing the job. I just have to, you know, I just have to sort of seal the deal. So economics here in Delaware is extremely important to me. I'm looking at the fact that, you know, we are 90, small business and industry is something that we've been losing here in Delaware anyway, and we're bleeding out right now. So one of the things I I don't feel like he's, I don't see where he's growing our manufacturing base here. So that's what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to reverse what I'm seeing happening.
So since March, the governor's office has largely managed the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic through executive order. How would you rate Governor Carney's job doing that? And were there some things that you would have done differently? And then kind of even beyond that, assuming there's no readily available vaccine or significant advances, what would you be doing day one if elected to manage the pandemic in Delaware?
One of the things, okay, there was four things in there, so trying to keep track of those four specific questions. So
sure.
I want to go back to the first one. You said, like, rating him on
his response to the pandemic.
Performance.
Yep.
The reason I'm running is because I think his performance has been poor. So let's get that one, you know, and move on from there. One of the things doing differently, you know, as a small business knows how to manage themselves and does not need the government coming in and telling them how to run their businesses, especially when you look at other businesses, larger businesses that have been able to run and operate. You know, a larger business has a larger amount of people inside of a store, where a smaller business in general has a way smaller amount of people. You know, when you look at things like hairdressers, massage therapists, nail, all these service industries, and our service industries, you know, virtually got wiped out. I just was shocked because most of them did not qualify. Their businesses did not qualify for help. It was shocking to see how many of my friends' businesses did not qualify because they were really too small, you know, too small to be able to help. So when you look at a business that's under 10 employees that literally makes makes enough money to keep all of them floating, but through this, they were virtually wiped out while Lowe's and Home Depot and other stores got to stay open. I really looked at that as hypocrisy. And why was it okay for those big businesses to be okay? And it's sort of like that too big to fail that we saw that happened during the last crisis that we had under George Bush, you know, where they gave all that money out to the big businesses and the small people were literally left floundering. So I saw it like repeat again. And I'm like, well, what didn't we learn? You know, like how many times do we need to learn this lesson? You know, it's small business is 97.7% of all business in this country, which means large business is only, you know, 2.3. So why are we, you know, why are we handing money to large businesses and large organizations when they are clearly not the backbone of this economy?
So if there's no real readily available vaccine or significant advances in treatment, is there something you would think you would want to do day one in managing this situation?
Well, number one, we knew that there were other advances. And over the years, there has been a tremendous movement into looking at is what inside of these vaccinations. And when you pull through the list of ingredients that's inside some of these vaccinations, I've refused vaccinations for over 10 years my own self. And I didn't appreciate 5 years ago when my granddaughter was born, I was told I had to get a flu vaccination in order to be able to see my granddaughter. And I was furious over that, and I became sick the next day. And so when I look at what these mandated vaccines do, I'm really questioning, and I do not believe the government has any right to tell somebody what they can inject inside of their body. So I will fight that tooth and nail. You know, I'm positive that I had COVID when I was coming home from Las Vegas. Yes, I was sick. Yes, it kicked my butt. Yes, it kept whirling back. But I fought it, and I'm alive today. So I question heavily, very, very heavily, the government's role in mandating and forcing people to take a vaccination that has not been properly studied, that, you know, that they're just, you know, shooting me up with something. I was like, you want to be a guinea pig and inject yourself? You go for it. But don't force people to go with something that has been not tested.
Let's go back to the economy. You've talked a little bit about that. Even when the pandemic subsides, certainly the country and the state are likely to face a continued recession. As governor, what will your priorities be for getting the economy back on track and create jobs for those who may not have jobs to go back to?
One of the things that I have been looking at is our manufacturing sector here. Before I sold my house and went on tour, I had a GM worker to my left and a GM worker to my right. And now it's been almost 20 years where we have virtually no car manufacturing here. So I put together a plan. I put together a plan to entice a car manufacturer back here. So I have written that out in my plans. I've also been looking at revamping how we utilize our prison system as well as the members of our handicapped communities through Elwin, Chimes, and things like that to see how we can utilize those populations to be able to create products that we can in turn bring back to the state and have it almost have it like cycle back into our programs. There's a lot of things that we can do differently, and I've set my plan to utilize that, as well as my manufacturing plan for the automotive industry. I've been looking at Dover, which would pull people from Newcastle County and Sussex County into the Kent County area. Kent County really gets forgotten. And Kent County used to have an incredible amount of manufacturing. You know, we had Playtex. We used to have a lot of farming industry in there. And we seem to have been losing a lot of that stuff over the years. So I put together a plan that would highlight all of that, pull from both counties, and utilize that the manufacturing, what we have here to be able to manufacture with.
So Delaware, like other states, has seen protests throughout the spring and summer focused on issues surrounding racial equity. The General Assembly did pass the first leg of a constitutional amendment explicitly adding protections against discrimination based on race, color, and national origin to the state constitution this past spring, as well as a ban on police use of chokeholds. A number of other bills are also expected in January when the legislature reconvenes. What do you feel needs to be done surrounding this issue of racial equity in state? What can the state do to address it?
If you actually got to sit down and meet with a lot of the people who actually write a lot of the things here in Delaware, it is shocking that racism literally starts with them. It's shocking. And I don't want to give names, but let's just say I've been in the Gold Ballroom on a few occasions, and I've seen a lot of our elected officials and the people who pull the strings behind the scenes, and I see how they behave, and I see what they do. So realistically, we need these people out. We need a whole new group of people in. They can't be touting that we need to get rid of racism when they're the racists. We need to get rid of them. They need to go. And realistically, with what I have been seeing in the last, I knew what I was seeing prior. I've been studying this for literally 20 years. So what I've been seeing, you know, what I was seeing from my window and looking at things, it became a lot more clearer once I stepped into this race and I really started to pay attention and watch what was happening And realistically, you know, talking with, there's a lot that you learn when you talk with somebody standing on a field before you get up at a podium and speak. So listening to what these people say, you know, having these conversations with them, our biggest issue is who we have currently in our administration, a lot of our administrations around the state. We need to clean house. Things need to get cleaned up, and that's all that there is to it.
So there's not been much push in Delaware, at least thus far, about defunding the police. Perhaps the closest thing has been discussion of student resource officers in schools, but that hasn't seemed to gain much traction either. What we have heard a fair amount about is the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights and use of force policies. Would you back efforts to revisit those and look at possible changes to the officers' Bill of Rights and use of force policies?
Yes, there's things that I feel do need to be done. And believe it or not, I've actually been I've been working on this one and addressing this. I've worked with a few police officers that were from New Jersey a couple of years ago, and was having conversations with them about putting together different tactics that we can use and utilizing different tactics. Number one, my father was a Delaware State Police trooper. Growing up, I knew how stressful my father's job was. And as one of his children, we knew how stressful that was inside of our house. So one of the things that I did is I became a massage therapist. So I became that front line person for my father to try to help my dad de-stress from the stress that he had from his job. And when I was in massage school, the very first place I went to offer my services free was the Delaware State Police. And I went to Troop 6 and invited every police officer to come in and to start to do things that would reduce their stress. So looking at the issues that we're having, I'm looking at things from a very holistic point of view and looking at ways that we can de-stress our men and women in uniform, as well as looking at the issues that they're facing, because we have a community that is completely stressed out as well. So I am looking at, you know, a whole bunch of different alternative angles to be able to help people manage their stress. Half the time when you're stressed and you snap, that's what causes the problem. So learning how to teach people how to deal with their stress and how to manage their stress, you know, is a big key issue here. As far as defunding the police, I think that's a recipe for an absolute disaster. But I do not believe the police should be policing themselves. I believe there needs to be a separate unit that looks at that. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. My husband worked for the Newcastle County Police, so every day I got an earful as to what was going on in there. So between my father working for the Newcastle, between my father being a state police trooper and my husband working for the Newcastle County Police, I literally have 50 years worth of information of things that, you know, that need to be changed between what, you know, my father saw, between what my husband saw, what we all talked about, and I've been working on these solutions for years.
So let's talk a little bit about education, because certainly the education funding issue is one the next governor is likely going to have to tackle. Chancery Court has already ruled the property tax system used in all three counties is unconstitutional, which could trigger property reassessments. And the second half of that lawsuit is still pending looks at funding inequities within the state education funding system itself. The question I'm asking you is, what do you feel needs to be done with the way that Delaware funds its schools?
One of the things that I want to look at is breaking, instead of this, how we have things all, we have, you know, made different, each county has probably at least 4-5 different school districts off the top of the head, plus the charter schools that are in there. We're already seeing that the charter schools are running more efficiently, giving a better education than what our public school system is. So those are two things that need to be looked at. And I'm looking to, you know, we've had a lot of fraud that has happened from superintendents over the years in school districts, which we couldn't do anything about because of the tentacles, the reaches that some of these superintendents, they basically pulled innocent people in. And so we couldn't follow through and do with anything. So I believe we need to centralize that and pull all these, pull the, you know, separate. Each county needs to be separate, but we need to look at what the charters are doing that are differently and look at what private schools do differently. Private schools in general give a way better education for less money than what taxpayers are paying for an education for their students. So we, you know, looking at all of this, and I actually already formed a task force for this 2 months ago, and we've already started having meetings on this within our own task force to see what we need to do different, how we can go about this, and what we need to do to be able to give our children an the education that they deserve to have.
I want to quickly run through a couple of other issues that were expected to see some debate during the past legislative session, but did not because pretty much everything was put on hold because of the pandemic. I want to get a quick sense of where you stand on these issues. First one would be reinstating the death penalty in Delaware. Would you be for or against that?
I'm against that.
Legalizing recreational marijuana, is that something you would support beyond what's current?
100%. I support the legalization. I do not believe that the plant belongs to the people. It does not belong to the government.
And there was a number of gun bills that were being considered in the General Assembly, ranging from getting rid of ghost guns and high-capacity magazines to banning assault weapons and creating a kind of gun permit system. Are there any of those type of things that you would support, or are there any that are just a flat non-starter for you?
I do. The Second Amendment is basically your protection for every other amendment that we have. And, you know, there's as far as, you know, there's a few things that I believe we can tweak inside of there. But we as citizens have the right to bear arms. We have the right to protect ourselves. And if this pandemic and the actions of this governor have not proven to the people of Delaware that we need to protect our Second Amendment rights, then people are sleeping.
So you would flatly be against really any effort to, whether it be ghost guns, high-capacity magazines, anything?
Like I said, I'm going to have to tweak a few things. I literally want to hear both sides, you know, of both sides on those points. You know, I really want to hear as far as high capacity, I look at that high capacity and question whether high capacity is really, really needed. But I believe once we open up that door, then we go down a very dangerous slope. And that is what my concern is. My concern is opening up a door. So like if you give a person an inch, they'll take a mile. So I'm very concerned with giving an inch on that, because it will just lead to the mile. And I believe protecting our Second Amendment rights is absolutely 100% paramount.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves during this election cycle? And if so, how would you address it if elected?
The homeless issue. The homeless issue in Delaware is just and the living conditions. I have been an advocate of homeless people my whole entire life. I took homeless people into my home that required it. I helped Family Promise get on its feet and literally hosted a dinner myself that I cooked all the food for and raised the funds for that charity to open. And when I toured, and that I did probably 10 years ago, I think close to 10 years ago. And when I look at the conditions that are in Kent County and in Sussex County, and when I tell you I tour the states, I am up and down these roads every single day. and talking with people. And in Ellendale, looking at the living conditions in Ellendale, looked like a third world country. These children barely have running water, barely have shelter over their head, have people that don't have that don't have the education to educate their children. So the homeless cycle, which leads to, you know, incarceration, which leads to opiate addictions. These are all in a wheel cart. They're not one separate issue. One issue leads to the other, which leads to the other, and we are not addressing this. And this, again, leads to, you know, why jobs are so important here, because with good jobs and a good education and good training, we can pull people out of this homeless cycle. And I am shocked. It is shocking that in the year 2020 that we still have this crisis here in Delaware. And I'm literally wondering, what have our elected officials been doing? You know, what are they doing? I don't think that they're doing much of anything, because the problem is here, and there is no reason for the problem to be here. We are a bountiful state. So why are we not valuing our people? Why are we not taking care of our people? Why do we have leaders that say to open us up as a sanctuary state when we have not taken care of our own people, our own residents here? And that is where I feel like this government has failed its people on a monumental level.
Kathy DeMatteis, Independent Party of Delaware candidate for governor, we thank you for your time on Candidate Conversations.
Thank you.
You can find all of our candidate conversations online at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org. Candidate Conversations are part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Tom Byrne. Thanks for listening.